Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode number 55. As we know, the Senorita isn't travelling so much overseas these days, but really enjoying roaming at home. So today I find myself in Tenterfield doing a story called Tenterfield Traveller. Yes, I don't believe anyone's ever done that, which is insane. However, I have found the man of town, I reckon, one of the men, he'll say, and he is running Tenterfield Tours, but he is a wealth of knowledge, and I love that he has an Italian heritage. So please welcome Kevin Santin.
Hello there.
How are you, buddy?
I am fantastic.
Yeah, so you were just telling me this incredible story at the School of Arts. Can we start there? And then we're also going on a tour, so we're going to go and have a look at the nature, because there's two things about Tenterfield that I've already learned.
Yes, heritage and nature.
Perfect. Let's start with the School of Arts and what was going on there so many years ago.
Well, the school, first of all, you've got to realise that Tenterfield is what is called an icon or a federation town. One of three federation towns in Australia. So why is it a federation town? Well, it played a very important part in bringing this country to federation, to bringing six British colonies to one nation.
How does a small country town do that?
Probably more to location than anything else. Of course, we straddle the Queensland-New South Wales border.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Right up on the Great Dividing Range. So you've got to remember, back in the 1800s, the late 1800s, to get from Brisbane to Sydney, you came through this town. You couldn't travel up via the coast. Too many rivers, all the great rivers coming off the Great Dividing Range.
Richmond, Clarence,
Tweed. Then you go further south, Macleay, the Hunter, the Hastings. All these rivers were barriers to people to travelling north from Sydney. So in the 1800s, after Sydney was settled and they spread west, you had to come north or south. So to come north, if you were on foot, which most people were, or horseback, you travelled up the what we now call the Great Dividing Range through the New England area, as we call it now. So to get to Brisbane, you came through this town called Tenterfield. This town was started in 1851, or gazetted a town in 1851, but it was long before that, around the 1840-41, that Europeans showed up here. So by the late 1800s, another important thing happened here, and that was the rail system. The Great Northern Railway arrived from Sydney. So you could travel in 1886 from Sydney up the Great Divide through Newcastle to us. Here, right on the Queensland, what today is now the Queensland, New South Wales border. It's the railway.
Yes, we're passing the railway as we speak. I'm loving this. This is a mobile podcast tour.
Yes, well, that's true.
And it's not visual, unfortunately. We've got to take a few pics.
You've got to think that in the late 1800s, railway travel revolutionised the way you travelled.
Yes.
From then on, instead of taking weeks or months to go from Brisbane, Sydney, again on horses or on foot, you could then travel by train 2 or 3 days to get from Sydney to Brisbane. It was the wonder of the day. Yep. And this was called the Great Northern Rail Line. The only problem was, just up the road is the Queensland border. And what did they do in those days? They all built different railway gauges because they hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they still
do.
Fast forward, and we all still do.
Yeah, it's not cool. Anyway,
no. So Queensland has a different railway gauge. It's a narrow gauge. New South Wales is a wider gauge. So when you got to Tenterfield, lo and behold, you had to wait. You waited for a connecting train. So the town was a popular place for that one. That's just one of the reasons that it was popular. The town was known as the Mother of the North. Politically, strategically, it had everything going for it. So you'd get off the train here, wait for your connecting train up on the border, Queensland side, and off you'd go to Brisbane and vice versa. The colonies were separated. Six separate British colonies. We started out as the colony of New South Wales, which engulfed 2/3 of this great country. But then over time, between 1788 and 1860 or 1859, the colonies broke off and we ended up with what we've got today. Six separate states plus territories now. But in those days, we were six separate British countries. And of course, when you got to the border, you were entering another country. Wow. So you had to pay taxes, customs, excises, whatever.
Wow.
Another reason Tenerife was on top, an important place, because you paid your taxes before you went across.
Yeah.
And came across. There was a particular man who went into Australian politics back in the early 1850s, Henry Parkes. Now, Henry Parkes is known as the father of Federation. And
is Parkes named after him?
The town of Parkes is named after
Absolutely.
Him in New
he
South
is.
Wales.
Yep.
Now, he had a vision. He wanted to see Australia united.
There's rocket science.
Boy, gee. And it's still difficult to see Australia.
In the 1800s, here we go.
Yeah, so he goes in and out of politics, and he was in and out of politics five times over his lifetime. It spanned roughly 50 years.
Mm.
He went into politics, and he was in politics until the day he died, which was in 1896. But one of his visions, and there were many visions, Parkes wanted this nation to become one nation.
Not now, in the sort of Pauline Hanson type way.
No, not in the Pauline, no.
Different.
No, different to that.
Different, yeah. And we touched on this before with the Indigenous culture as well.
Correct, and that's extremely important, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what he does is, at one particular time, between 1882 and 84, in the many times he's in and out of politics, he's the member. He's our parliamentary member for Tenerife.
Right.
But he never came here. In that period of time, he was overseas, England, and he went to America as well. And what he did in America, he went and saw how the Great America, as they say, went from, and somebody will probably correct me, but I think it's correct, 13 British colonies to one nation with state governments and a federal governing body with a Senate.
Yeah.
So he went, he saw how they did it in America. So he figured, well, you know, we could do that here. Something similar, except not by war. America got their independence from Britain by going to war, turfed out the Queen.
Yeah.
So he figured, maybe we could do that here, but keep the Queen as our head of state.
Wow.
So off it goes, and he comes back, and eventually, look, there'd been talk from about 1867 amongst all the colonies that maybe we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. But talk. That was it. Nothing happened. And in that meantime, different railway gauges were built. There was no defence forces. Things were just totally separate for the six colonies. So he figures, well, we can change this. So in 1889, he takes a boat trip and he goes up the coastline and sails into Brisbane, talks to the Queensland government about federation, about becoming one nation. He was pretty cluey, old Henry. So he then catches the train from Brisbane to the Queensland border, just up the road at Wallangarra. And then, of course, he's got to get on a New South Wales train. But he felt he owed the people of Tenerife something, because he'd been the parliamentary member here. Never been here, basically. So what he does is, he has the Premier's train, as it's called, waiting for him, brings him to Tenerife. He has a travelling journalist with him as well. And he gets off.
I would have been on that train in that day.
You would have been.
Keep going.
That would have been great.
Yeah, I reckon.
So he gets off the train, cut a long story short.
Yeah.
The whole town's there to meet him, and they put on a banquet for him in the Tenerife School of Arts building.
The most amazing building.
It is an astonishing building.
And is that?
Fully preserved, owned by the National Trust and looked after by the people of Tenerife.
And the first building in
ever
Australia
bought by
the National Trust.
Amazing,
yeah. And it's stunning, yes.
And the anniversary of that is coming up next year.
Wonderful. Now, so he has a speech.
So he makes a speech in, they put on a big banquet for him in the building, in the banquet hall. And anybody who's anybody in town is there. This is a very centre of politics as well, Tenterfield. Mm. There's a lot of Federation talk going on, and there's a couple of prominent people here. So he delivers a speech in the Tenterfield School of Arts. And now that's called now the Tenterfield Oration. So this is one of the reasons Tenterfield is known as a Federation town. And we also market ourselves as the birthplace of our nation.
Wow.
Because after he makes this speech, and in the speech he goes on, and it rambles on for a long time, but to cut things a little short, he says, "One day, one nation, one destiny, one people. What the great America did by war, we can do peace by peace. We can still keep the Queen as our head of state. When the great America went to independence, their population was roughly 3.5 million. 100 years later, Australia's population in the 1880s, roughly 3.5 million. So the time was right, if not now, to do something."
Yeah.
And one of the great reasons for this is defence. We had no national defence force.
Wow.
So he put forward, we go to a state-based system like America, have a federal governing body with a Senate, and their job, of course, was for things like foreign affairs, defence, and so forth. Mm. He was also a big advocate for the public school system. He had Florence Nightingale train nurses to take on our...
Oh, love a bit of Florence Nightingale.
Yeah, to take on our health system.
Wow,
he had all these visions, but of course... The biggest one was to bring Australia together as one nation. Now, he delivered this speech in 1889 on the 24th of October in the Tenterfield School of Arts. So then that started the popular movement again. As I said earlier, there was talk already, but this reignited the popular movement to get this country to go together.
Mm.
So within the next 11 years, 12 years, there are various... Parks delivers this speech... almost the same speech many times over in the next coming years, all around the colonies of New South Wales and Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So this movement has started. And in various places like Sydney, Melbourne, Hobart, Adelaide, Bathurst, Corowa, Tenterfield, this movement is now gaining momentum. And eventually it's put a vote to the people. So in 1901, the vote has been done, all done and dusted, overwhelming support to go to one nation. And of course, the Constitution had to be drafted in that time as well.
Mm.
So it was held in various places, various people, various legislative councils, all put their minds together to bring this Constitution together. So, and as it was, the very first Parliament of... our great nation, 9th of May 1901, held in Melbourne. And of course, that because we didn't have a capital city back then, Melbourne hosted our federal parliament till I think about 1929, I think it was.
Geez, you're good on your politics.
When their old parliament house in Canberra opened, remember?
Yeah.
And that opened on the 9th of May. And of course, our new parliament house opened on the 9th of May. 1988.
Wow. Hey, are you in politics?
No. God help us.
So just going, I wanted to know a little bit. Thank you for that journey, because that's pretty bloody amazing history, right?
Well, that's just a short history.
No, but it's still really important stuff, and I love that you put Florence in there as well, because that's great. So, Kevin, you've got an exotic-sounding surname. Are you part of the Italian migration to this northern... New South Wales region? What's going on there?
Yes, my father was. My grandfather, you know, that's Nonnell.
Nonnell, yes.
Yeah, my Nonnell. He was born in northern Italy.
Yes.
And come First World War, He enlisted and fought for the Italian army during the First World War. He was what they call bersaglieri, and like a sniper or a sharpshooter.
Yeah.
So he fought for the freedom of Italy from the Austro-Hungarian Empire in that northern Italy above Venice region.
Yeah.
So the town that he was living in was occupied by the army, of course, by the invading armies. Liberation came along and northern Italy was free, but devastated. That area was wreaked by war. So after the First World War, the town, the little village of San Giovanni del Tempio, poor, extremely poor. And like everywhere else, they're looking for a better life somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, where's the better life? The great America, Britain,
yeah.
Australia.
And land, tobacco farmer?
No, land of milk and honey.
Land of milk and honey, because...
No, he was a banana farmer down around Kyogle.
Oh, wow.
So he emigrated in 1928. He came out because other people from that area came to Australia.
Yes.
And they immigrated to the Lismore area.
Yes. Is now, this where this little Italy and all that comes in as well?
No, that's a different story again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a separate immigration.
Okay, so this is...
But this is earlier on.
I know
on.
That story, but I don't know
this
one.
That's the Duray expedition.
Yeah.
So, and they settled down south of Lismore,
that's
New
right,
Italy.
That's right, but the Lismore one, I don't know.
No, different story. They came out looking for a better life. So when, you know, there was people came out here and found their way to Lismore. And what you did was, wow, this is the place. Tell everybody back home. So write a letter and say, you need to come here. This is where you can make your money and start your new life. Get away from the poverty. So, and that's what happened to my nonnel. He eventually left in 1928. But he came by himself. And this is not just exclusive to nonnel. This happened to a lot of families.
Yeah.
1928, he leaves. 16-week trip to get here on a leaky boat. He eventually ends up in Lismore because that's where he's been sponsored to come to.
Yeah.
Never spoke English.
Yeah.
So he started working wherever he could, doing anything, vegetable gardening, whatever, out around the Rosebank area, eventually finding his way to Kyogle, where he took up a lease on a banana farm. But he was here by himself, 1928. It was 1938 when he had saved enough money. You've got to sort of take that in, 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years before he'd saved enough money to bring the family.
Wow.
From Italy to Lismore.
And your dad?
My dad was 2 when he left, and he was 13. Wow. There was 5 children. My dad was 2 when he left, and he was 13 when he went
incredible.
Next door. And they came in through Fremantle, where they were processed as immigration, and then around to Sydney on a train up to the Northern Rivers.
And so Kyogle is where your family...
And that's where they settled.
And where you were born, basically.
No, I was actually born in Lismore. No. My father ended up in Kyogle. They ended up just outside of Kyogle on a banana farm.
Yep.
1938, what happens then? 1 year later?
Yeah.
War.
Yeah.
Second World War. And Italy, this time, is now the enemy. They're not allied. So
things get tough.
So it was a bit tough. But what do you do? They weren't interned up there. They were not put in prison in the Kyogle area. And there's many Italians around there. They all came over to this area.
Yeah.
So they weren't interned, but they were monitored. They had to have papers. They were monitored. But the best way to get around it, and of course the police had to do all the checking in those days. They were sort of checked once a week to make sure they weren't out trying to kill Aussies or whatever.
God, what a time.
Yeah, because they were the enemy.
Makes this global pandemic kind of look sort of soft, really, when you think about it.
This is nothing.
Nothing, yeah. Nothing.
Yep. Anyway, well, I shouldn't say that. It is something.
No, just looks the a little hardships, softer. I said a little softer.
Yeah, the hardships these people went through to build this country.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're up there in the Kyogle area doing their bit. And it was about 1946. My old man by then is about, he's 21 years old. And I course, what's any young red-blooded Italian man want to do?
Marry a gorgeous.
He wants to go and find a...
Australian filly?
Yeah. Yeah.
So where was she hiding in this
fall? Well, no, my mother was... she was born in 1930. As a matter of fact, she's just celebrated her 90th birthday.
Oh, fantastic. Is your father still with us?
No.
And where did she from?
Well, she was on a neighbouring farm.
Uh-huh. Easy.
So what they did in those days for entertainment, you went to dances on a Saturday
gorgeous,
night.
Yes.
So my old man went to a dance and lo and behold, here was this young girl.
Gorgeous.
Sitting there waiting to be asked to be danced or whatever.
Yep.
And sing C'est la vie.
Up they went. So
and
then
that
they,
was it.
They, then they moved to Lismore, do they?
Yeah, they married in 1950.
Yep.
Again, frowned upon because Italy had been the enemy.
Wow.
But wow. It all worked. Moved to Lismore in 1952, and away they went. So we were all born in Lismore.
When you speak to your mum, like particularly at this time, which is hard for... our elders to sort of really across the globe to understand what's going on, but does she have a sort of knowing about it because she's lived through so many different the depression?
My
and
God,
what have
does
you.
She ever born in 1930
yeah,
right up till now?
A real, so it's almost like a calm conversation she has with you now, probably.
Yep.
I imagine.
Yep.
Knowing.
The days on the farm, you like no supermarket, you grew everything.
Yeah.
And you ate everything from the farm.
Yeah.
School, you go to school with pencil, book and slate.
Yeah.
You didn't have a bloody computer.
Yeah.
And if you had to chase the horse for 2 hours before you rode it 4 mile to go to a school.
Yeah.
Totally. And milk the cows before you went to school.
How many kids did they end up having?
In my family?
Yeah.
There's six of us.
Yeah. And I was going to say there's a few.
And we're, you know, thank the man upstairs or somebody that we're all still alive and healthy.
Wow. And so... Kevin, thank you for that story because it's all incredible history and I love going back to go forward, and your mum would be amazing to talk to.
Yes,
just
she
for
is.
Her knowing and just that incredible yep. life that she has led. And you fall into tourism.
Yes, we do.
That is what you've done pretty much all your life. Is that right?
Probably the last 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, so I can tell as soon as I met you, I mean, obviously you have Tenterfield Tours, you're in tourism, but I just knew there was a backstory to you in the sense of tourism has that sort of dynamic reputation, but it's also hard going and it's not necessarily about the cash, it's about the passion.
Correct.
So you have a certain personality that fits it because you like a good time, right? And
yes.
You like people.
It's all about giving people an experience.
That's it. So how did you first start in tourism? What sort of got you to this position you're in now?
We first started tourism up in Mullaney, Montville.
Yep.
Sunshine Coast,
mm-hmm.
Queensland.
Oh, hang on, I will just say you married a casino girl.
Well,
fell in love with a casino girl. And can I just say, I married a casino boy.
Wow, talk
wow.
about a...
Tell you what, that town of...
6 degrees of separation.
I just changed
darling.
The name today, too, because I realised it had two S's in it. It was Casino, you know that Italian name.
Yes, that's correct.
Off. People look at me a bit strange, but it's a true story because the meatwork still has that sign
correct.
There.
That's correct, Casino.
But I changed it today to Casanovas because... Man, the guys and girls that are coming out of that town.
Yep.
That's funny.
Yeah, we can. Well, that's another story.
Oh, no, sorry,
we
I
won't go down that area.
We'll just segue there before we go to Mullaney because that was just a connection that we
yeah.
had.
Anyway, we ended up in Mullaney and we did accommodation up there. And but we specialise for people with... disabilities, and which is called accessible accommodation.
Oh, and there's not enough of it around.
And
you guys were doing it 20 years ago. That's
and we had a very good relationship with Queensland Tourism and Disability Services because of what we did. And anyway,
yeah,
we did our thing up there. We were also in what was called the luxury couples market. And look, it all worked, and that was all good, but... there were many things that got us. We had to get out and do something different.
So why Tenterfield? Because of that story you just told me? The
well,
backstory?
I found the history here was astonishing.
But you are a Northern Rivers boy.
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
So they tend to come home to roost.
Tend to come home. That's exactly
that's
right.
That's true. Well, I'm married to one because we've come home to roost, right?
Yeah,
so hello.
So
we're
that's,
Sydney,
yeah, I don't
here.
Disagree with that.
Yep, yep.
And looking for a quieter lifestyle.
Yes.
And... we came to Tenterfield and saw it was ready to boom, burst out
as,
in
as
the tourism bubble as a
yeah.
destination
yeah.
because of what we've got here. And you're going to see some of this natural
well,
wonder
just,
stuff
let's
now.
Just, we're on a really kind of gravel road.
We are
doing very well here, and Kevin is guiding us through, and we're passing through what looks like private properties to get to a natural wonder. By the sounds of it,
we are. We're travelling through. We call this our Granite Formations Drive. Now, I'm sorry, darling. I was just looking ahead. I thought we had a some native wildlife on the road.
Oh, that's all right. Bring that in. Bring that in.
But no, it's all good.
Yep. Okay.
This road we're on, it's a tourist drive.
But it's off the beaten track. You wouldn't know to come
no,
on this
road. No, that's right.
This is why you go to Kevin.
True.
You have to, mate. I wouldn't know to be up here.
Well, I'm one of the people that can tell you about it.
Okay. Perfect.
But
it's humble. We like that.
We're going through, all the land around us is private property, but this is a public road.
Wow.
Now, this is, when you talk the northern New England, you're talking granite. And, of course, that extends across this imaginary border up the road called the Queensland border.
Which is, so the granite belt.
And the granite belt is the same sort of, it's the same stuff. This is all granite. Now, so we're in what we call granite country. So this is a drive that's going to take you through some of the most stunning scenery that you've ever seen. And the beauty about this, and in Tenterfield, in this location, is you can drive through this. You can physically almost touch this stuff.
Yeah.
And then go and feel it. There's no one. No.
No.
No. No. There's not a thousand tourists.
Just cattle ahead.
Just cattle and sheep and native animals.
Yeah. Yep. It's very Australiana here right now.
Oh, this is typical Australiana here.
It's amazing.
And you're on the Great Dividing Range. We're, at the moment, we would be just on 1,000 metres above sea level.
Wow.
Tenterfield's about 900, so we're going up.
Wow.
And when we finish our little drive, we will be 1,300 metres above sea level.
That's incredible.
So it's a terrific drive. It doesn't take long.
No.
But you're going to see
off the beaten track.
You are, and you're going to see some of the most stunning country. Mm. Now, look, there's so many of these drives around here that you can go on.
Yeah.
And you're going to see something different.
Yeah.
The whole time, but this particular one, we call it our Granite Drive.
Yeah.
This Great Dividing Range was formed by volcanic activity. Go down to your area down in the Tweed Valley.
Yeah, down the caldera. Yeah.
And you've got Mount Warning.
Yeah, Wollumbin Mount Warning and the beautiful red.
Okay,
soil.
So what was different. Mount Warning? Mount Warning is what? What's left of a volcano?
That's right, it's the cork, yeah.
Correct. Well, up here, we didn't have the volcano. It's underground. All the volcanic activity is underground here, where we are.
Now,
No, all finished. Thank God.
Yeah, so
unless we might get blown off the road here.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
But if we were travelling along here, this Great Dividing Range was formed hundreds of millions of years ago.
Yeah.
And it was formed by volcanic activity. The volcanic activity, and God, I hope there's not too many geologists listening. Push the earth up.
I don't tend to have that many geologists.
Push the earth up. So your molten lava underneath the earth is all bubbling away.
Yeah.
And the earth is pushed up. So then it stops. The volcanic activity stopped. Now, if we were travelling on this road 200 million years ago, we'd be a couple hundred metres higher.
Wow.
But what's happened is the earth has eroded away. And what it's done is expose what's underneath. What happened with all the molten lava? Turned into rock.
Granite.
Wow. Now, it's either soft or it's hard. And that was depending on cooling temperatures. But
this is pretty cool here, doesn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. We go down to minus 5,
but
6,
no
7.
But no snow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Our last snow was 2015.
Okay, great.
I should show you this if you had the time.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
So
with the granite.
The rock is eroding away now. The earth has eroded. It still does. And now the rock is eroding away as well. So what you're going to visualise right in front of us now, we're about to hit this granite rock country.
Wow.
And that's it. That's wow. That's the word. So what I need to do once we hit this rocky stuff is shut up.
So we can feel the magic of it.
Exactly.
Okay,
you look at it and go, my God, look at this.
Yeah, because I can feel it's got a bit of a spirit talking to me.
Now,
so before we head into that shut up period, because then we'll finish this beautiful podcast we're doing together. Tell me a little bit about, so we know about your tours, which you can pretty much, they're bespoke, but you can curate them for people's needs. That's correct. Your whole thing. So correct. We touched on Indigenous tourism, which is something I believe this country really should start to put its pieces of the puzzle together and go back.
Yes, exactly.
What is your interest in that area?
I have a huge interest in that.
Yes.
Just before I do.
Yes.
When you look beside you there.
Yes.
See that rock?
Yes, I do.
And what does it look like? Rough? Mottly?
Well, I was actually getting a creature out of it. I was going to get more like a
beautiful... No, not what the rock looks like, but the actual rock itself.
Yes, mottly and
mottly
rough.
And rough?
With a little bit of dusty pink through it or something.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, that's the colouring. And look here. And look at it. You can see it falling apart. See just here?
Yes.
Well, that's the softer version of the granite.
Right.
See how it's eroding?
Yes.
Now look up in front of you.
Wow.
And look at it. Hard as.
Incredible.
So that's your two types. It's the same rock.
It's just different.
Now this area here that we're in, getting back to the Indigenous area.
Yes, great. You're such a good storyteller.
That's my job.
Usually I have to direct people. But
tell stories.
Yeah, good. What, nice.
Tell the story. That's what people want to know. Tell the story.
Great. Better interview me one day before I park it. Getting back to the Indigenous story of this area.
Okay. This Tenterfield area was a meeting ground for Aboriginal nations. Now, it could be said there were three major Aboriginal nations here. It's said there's four, and people say there's three.
Yes.
But if you... The three major nations that frequent in this area, the Yukumbal people, we call this Yukumbal country.
Mm-hmm.
The Kamilaroi people and the Bundjalung people. Now, the Bundjalung people are where you're from.
That's right. I knew they'd be visiting. This would be part of the meeting place.
Yeah. Now, the Bundjalung alone had probably 10 different tribal groups.
That's right, yeah.
With 10 different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
just... Complexity, yeah.
You know, and this is one of the things that people have forgotten. The early British sort of tended to talk to these people as just being savages wandering around with being lost.
Yeah, no, they weren't lost.
But they weren't. They had culture. They had a living system. And their system of living and their culture is astonishing.
Oldest in the world.
It's just astonishing how they survived for all this time.
Yeah, through some pretty rough and rugged landscape. Hey?
So in this area here... The Bundjalung people, they came right up as far as Tenterfield, their nation.
Yeah.
And then the Kamilaroi, the Yukumbal, and there was another group, the Ngadabal, whether they're the same. But for our purposes, the Yukumbal, Bundjalung, and the Kamilaroi.
And meeting place as in happy times?
This was a meeting ground. It was a neutral ground.
Wow.
They would come here to meet, to trade.
Wow.
Ceremonial time. All this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bald Rock, another story. The largest exposed granite monolith in the southern hemisphere of the world.
Wow.
Similar in size to Uluru.
Incredible. We're climbing it tomorrow.
And you're going to climb it tomorrow? And when you get there, you will just get there and you will just go, wow.
Breath.
And it is stunning. But that's for you. You have to feel the magic.
Yeah, no, there won't be any podcast there. So we're going to wind this little beauty up because I'm really looking forward to something. I'm going to put this to you out there. You're Indigenous to it. You're going to keep developing the Indigenous knowledge that you have.
We
and
do.
Into an Indigenous tour. Do you already have one?
We don't do... A full-on Indigenous tour,
but
no.
Would you be
but that's going
open to connecting with one of the elders to do that.
We do that. We connect with the elders here.
Fantastic.
And we in the future there will be a development. They are getting ready to do their stuff now, which
yes.
is great. And
yeah.
I think that's going to be centered around native foods.
Yeah, fantastic.
Which
Why
is
not?
Great.
Yeah.
And but I
also art. I'd imagine would be in that too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Art. Food,
yeah, culture.
And it's so important to tell the story.
Yeah, and I can't wait for that. And you're, I love that you're really passionate about it, so it'll do really well. Now, just before we leave your tourism side and finish up, you were also talking about the European market and the work that you've been doing. Where in particular is interested in coming to Tentaville?
Well, look what you're looking at now here. Isn't this something else?
It's incredible.
And you're driving right amongst it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
There are rocks here that are big as buildings.
I'm loving the dusty pink on it. It's crazy.
Well, that's their colouring.
Yeah. So where in Europe is finding Tentaville?
We work with a company based in the Netherlands and Germany.
Yeah, right.
And there's an expat Aussie who owns the... And there was an expat New Zealander. And we were able to meet up with these people and convince them, because their clientele want to see something different and do something different.
Yeah.
They're not interested in going to the Gold Coast.
No.
Or Noosa, Byron Bay. Mm.
Well,
they want to get off.
This is the nature base.
This is what they want to do.
Yeah, it's
amazing. They want to feel the history of the country. They want to know the history.
Yep.
And they want to know the nature.
Is this the Great Dividing Range in front of us here?
You're looking directly west now.
Yeah, incredible.
This is what's it's called the Mole, M-O-L-E, the Mole River District.
Wow.
So this is the sort of the beginning areas of one of the areas of the Mole River.
Wow.
So any water here will end up... Where we are, we're 10 k's out of Tentaville. If it rains here, this water will end up in Adelaide, down in the Murray.
Oh, I love that. That's incredible.
So this Mole River will flow down into the Jumerik.
Wow.
The Jumerik River will end up in the McIntyre systems, the McIntyre into Darling, the Darling
that's
into the Murray.
That's a long bloody way away, and that's incredible how
tomorrow
that...
when you go over to Bald Rock, if it rains there, that's going to go into Clarence, and that will flow down into the east.
Love it.
But here, this will eventually, you would hope, if it isn't sucked out by something or other, it would reach Adelaide.
So just finishing up on you as a person, because this has been wonderful and I do want to just breathe in this spirit and really take it in. Who and where, I didn't give you the heads up on this because you're such a smart man, Kevin. Who and where inspires you around the world? So this podcast is all about people and place. So who's a person that has inspired you through your life? You don't have to narrow it down to one person. And where? Where do you love?
That's a difficult question.
That's why I do it.
Gee.
And then I get you to talk amongst yourselves so you can answer it.
Wow.
Maybe go with the first thing that you think of.
You could put me anywhere in this great country.
Yeah, you're very into Australia, mate.
And
you love it.
We are so blessed in this country.
Yeah.
And you see this when we bring in these Europeans.
Yeah, they get it. Yeah.
They get it. They get what we've got. Look where we are.
Yeah.
The Europeans that come here, we were able to get them off the beaten track and bring them through Tentaville.
Yeah.
And there's a whole system involved in this.
Yeah.
They come out here, they look at this, and there's no one.
Yeah.
There's us.
Yeah, that's right.
Back in Europe, there's wall-to-wall people.
That's right.
There's no nature.
Overpopulation.
There's no wild animals. They're just astounding. That's my inspiration.
And the colours are just different from what you've seen.
That's my inspiration. I come out here any day, any time, and it's different.
Wow.
Your colours are different. Your light is different.
So I'm going to say Australia is your inspiration.
The country from my past... From what my family came from poverty in Italy to look for a better place.
Yeah, look what they got.
Look what they've got and look what they left us.
Yeah.
I just hope my children appreciate it.
Yeah, good.
So
on
my
you,
inspiration
you're
is.
You're in the right industry.
This
you
is
are.
My country. The Australia is my inspiration.
Love it. And people are your inspiration, I
Too
would
right.
say.
I love telling the story.
I would say we don't even need to narrow it down for you because people,
you've
probably
love gathered
it.
That by now.
Absolutely. Can I just say thank you so much for bringing us out here today? And I'm going to get off this digital device and microphone and really absorb what is in front of us. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Not a problem.
Adios.